Hey, this is Sandy.
And Randy.
And we're here on AT Corner.
Being an athlete trainer comes with ups and downs, and we're here to showcase it all.
Join us as we share our world in sports medicine.
Welcome back to another episode of AT Corner. For this week's story episode, we will be diving into general medical conditions.
Yeah, we're going to do a pretty good overview, I would say. We got stories from seizures, cancer, diabetes, asthma, pregnancy, female athlete triad, eating disorders. And also, I thought we would start with some stories that of gen med conditions that athletic trainers haven't heard of before.
See, this happens. This happens a few times,
That's why I thought I would start with it. Because
I think it's a good start.
I mean, I've had an athlete who just came in, didn't put something on their physical, and then all of a sudden had a crisis. And I was like, trying to figure out history, and they were like, oh, I have G6PD.
Gesundheit.
I know. I was like, I've never heard of that. Can you please help me, like, help you?
Yeah. Hey, that's how I learned about, Ehlers-Danlos.
Oh, really?
I didn't know about it until I had an athlete with it, and then I looked it up, and now I hear it everywhere.
Right. It's pretty big in performing arts, so I feel like. That's what's funny to me is I feel like sometimes depending on what setting you're in, I feel like some things are more likely to occur.
Yeah, that's true.
Or maybe certain sports and certain settings attract people who have a certain type of...
I would say maybe beneficial. Right?
Yeah, because an extent.
Right, because with Ehlers-Danlos, right, it's joint laxity.
Right.
Right, so that kind of mobility could be beneficial
kind
for
some sports.
Kind of
attracts the performing arts world.
Yeah, right.
So G6PD is actually, I had to Google the name of it because I couldn't remember, glucose 6-phosphate dehydrogenase deficiency.
That's a mouthful.
Exactly. And so what happened was the kid, it was a football camp, and he was one of my athletes, and he's just participating in the first few days of camp, and he collapses.
Love that.
Yeah, so I was thinking, like, heat stroke,
yeah,
right?
Of course.
I have to get this kid in the ice bath. So I go over and I am obviously like treating his symptoms and getting him out of the sun and stuff. And then he mentioned something that he couldn't keep food down.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, well, do you have food poisoning or is there something like going on? And he was basically like, no, like I have a disorder that like sometimes I just can't eat.
Yeah.
And so, and I was like, okay, well then like, later on, we started going into nutrition and stuff. But basically, what I found out, he put his mom on the phone later, like after I treated him and everything. He put his mom on the phone because I was like, I need to know, like, if you're going to be my athlete for this season, I have to figure out how we can avoid this because we're not going to be playing this game. So basically, talked to his mom, and his mom was like, hey, you know, he has this and he has medication, but, you know, sometimes. Like, this is going to happen. Basically, it's a genetic disorder. This is what I found out. And it causes breakdown of the red blood cells just like sickle cell would.
Yeah.
Like that hemolysis.
Yeah.
But it's only in response to, like, certain stressors. And I think, like, exercise is obviously a huge stressor.
It's a big stressor.
It's not related to sickle cell because I think they're different, like, enzymes and chromosomes. But it presented very much similarly.
Like a sickling event.
Right. So I just worked with his mom to try to figure out a treatment plan. And you'll kind of hear that through the rest of the episode that we had a couple other athletic trainers who did that as well.
Nice.
So that was a good learning experience for me. Because I was like, G6PD, never heard of it. Sounds like an airplane.
You should have got CEUs for that.
Seriously. I was like, can you tell me next time before you collapse, please? Yeah. Thanks.
I feel like this is something that I need to know.
Have you ever had someone come across with, other than Ehlers-Danlos? Oh, you already mentioned that.
Yeah. I think that was the only thing that I've had that I was like,
I've never heard of.
What is this? Excuse me?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I feel like the G6PD is the one that sticks out definitely.
Yeah. I could tell. I mean, with a name like that.
I've had a couple athletes with POTS. Oh, you know what? I had someone with mast cell syndrome.
Oh, that's cool. I guess maybe not cool, but that's interesting.
Right. The mast cell was actually interesting because I had never heard of it before. It was a visiting athlete. I'm not going to tell what sport. But basically, this is like an allergic response mm-hmm. to certain stressors, I assume.
Yeah.
But they didn't go into like an anaphylactic shock. It was more like super low blood pressure. This person was like in and out, almost like in and out of consciousness.
Okay.
And they just had like general like malaise and body pain.
Oh, that sucks.
Right. And so I guess they also had pills that they would help take, but it took 15 to 20 minutes to like kind of set in.
It's not ideal during a sporting event.
Right.
We need it now.
Right. So that was a new one for me. We have the first story is anonymous. You want to read this first one?
Yes. Anonymous says, I had an athlete with von Willebrand. I want to make it sound German. Willebrand. I had an athlete with von Willebrand disease, a blood disorder where their body had low levels of a specific clotting factor. I had to travel with a dose of their clotting factor in case of emergency. If they sustained an injury in which they were externally bleeding, we would have to go to the hospital and have it administered by IV. This athlete did sustain some orthopedic injuries that required surgery, and our surgeon had to work with hematology to have their clotting factor administered pre, during, and post-surgery. Ooh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This athlete was also participating in a contact sport, well, of course. So I would often see pretty significant bruising from smaller contact/hits. They were diagnosed when they were young, I believe in the third grade. But he had a less severe case of it. Most severe cases would preclude any athlete from contact sports. Interesting. Yeah. That is an interesting kind of complication, like the surgery part.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh yeah, that's, you got to control bleeding when you're in surgery.
Seriously. But also the fact that like a blood disorder in contact sports, like that's a really good point.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, right, the bruising aspect of that, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. It's nice that they had that like emergency dose.
Oh, 100%. It's always nice to have extras of the actual medication that the athletes need because, you know, things happen.
It's nice to actually, you know, have a plan for like.
Yeah. Right. Like
when things happen.
Kids forget or like it's in their bag, but their bag's way over there. The field's way over here. So it is nice to have some emergency go-tos for them.
Mm-hmm. So this next one is by Courtney P. I had an athlete diagnosed with functional neurological symptom disorder. It is a seizure-like activity without the actual seizure. So their body will look like it's seizing, but their brain and neurofunction will be normal. It hasn't happened during athletics, and parents say that exercise actually reduces the symptoms. I had conversations with parents, coaches, school nurse, and some admin. This athlete has their own EAP created by the parents, school nurse, and AT, and signed by the athlete's overseeing MD.
Oh, nice.
The coaches carry it with them to events so they can inform medical personnel on site.
Oh, that's cool.
See, I really like this idea of like a personal EAP.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's the one way to get everyone on the same page, have it written, have it available so that, you know, whatever happens, whenever it happens, if you are not there, this person can still be taken care of.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's just like athletes with diabetes in the position statement, right? They're saying you should have a written care plan. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, here's what the plan is. If this happens, do this, right? So same idea. That's pretty cool.
Right.
That is awesome.
Mm-hmm. So I thought after that we would go into seizures.
Look at that segue right into seizures.
I mean, that's kind of crazy. I don't know. I wonder, like, neurological stuff is just wild. Bizarre. It's crazy.
I mean, they have their whole own specialty.
Right.
Neuros.
So I did ask on our Instagram stories, have you ever treated an athlete with a seizure? Surprisingly, from our responses, the people who responded, only 37% of people said yes.
Hey, put me in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I had one. I almost had an athlete with epilepsy, too.
Really?
Uh-huh. It was going to be during, this was during COVID, and we were recruiting someone, or well, she was supposed to be on our team, but she never made it out because COVID, right? Mm-hmm. It was kind of lax on things, and we weren't doing anything at that time. So they were like, yeah, you could stay out there. But yeah, I had to have multiple conversations with her about, okay, like, what's your
epilepsy plan, mm-hmm. right? Communicating with her doctors and stuff like that to get me a plan of like, hey, here's what to do. Here's what it kind of presents. Here's what her triggers are and stuff like that. So it was actually really interesting. I mean, she never ended up coming, so I never had to like treat her. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like hers was pretty manageable.
That's good.
Like she had a pretty good management plan. So it sounded like it wasn't too debilitating, but yeah.
That's one thing that I talked to a lot of the people as I was gathering the stories for this episode was about the management of these, because I feel like GenMed is just, you know, unknown.
yeah.
There's so much out there, but I think if you have a good management plan, it's a lot less scary.
Yep.
And, you know, some athletes have had whatever disease or disorder for their entire life or for a lot of their life. So a lot of it's very managed, but some athletes are new to this and, you know, less managed, which puts a lot more on the provider.
Or also too, the ones who still don't know yet what's going on,
mm-hmm.
right? How many times have we come across an athlete? Oh, I have this like going on, but they don't know why or what it is. Or it's like,
cool.
that's great. I mean, obviously that's frustrating for them because it's like, you want to know what's going on. Why does this happen to me?
Right, right. And also trying to get them to the right specialist and they just keep getting passed around. And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating.
It is. The healthcare system can be frustrating at times.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I got passed around a ton before I was diagnosed with Crohn's.
Yeah, you did. You had a lot of other diagnoses.
Mm-hmm. And then you get also the people who just like pass you off and... you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Then you have to be the advocate for your athlete, mm-hmm. which we do talk about later.
Oh, sweet.
But anyway, for seizures, we do have this first one from MM. The seizure happened after a softball game. The game had already ended, and I was in the middle of tending to another athlete with a knee injury. I heard people yelling for me across the field, a good distance away, on a paved walked path going back towards the school, and saw someone on the ground, so I ran towards them. It was one of the away team athletes. It turns out she had a history of seizures and had fallen to the ground. I did my best to keep away the people crowding, including the person who claimed to be a nurse, who tried to grab the athlete's head while she was actively seizing. Please don't restrain her like that, especially when I'm worried she may have hit her head in the fall. Yikes.
Yeah.
I activated EMS, put the athlete in a recovery position once I was fairly certain C-spine was okay. The athlete would seize on and off and was somewhat responsive in between seizures, but was disoriented, including saying at one point that she couldn't see.
Oof.
That is scary.
Yeah.
The wildest part about the situation, though, was dealing with activating EMS in a rural setting. Between the onset of seizures and when she was finally transported took probably about 40 minutes.
Whoa.
Which was absolutely terrifying when you have someone seizing on and off.
Yeah.
40 minutes is a long time.
That's a long
especially
time.
Especially like seizures in general take like a minute or two. They really shouldn't take longer than that.
Yeah.
I mean, they do sometimes, which is
really terrifying.
Bad. Right.
Which makes it feel like an eternity.
I mean, you're supposed to time seizures.
Yes, you're supposed to time seizures because you can tell if they're changing. Like if someone has like, it's used to being very quick, but this one was like very long. Like, oh, that can't be good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here. Status epilepticus occurs when a seizure lasts more than 5 minutes.
Hmm.
It's a long time.
That is a long time. I guarantee that feels like an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tonic-clonic usually lasts 1 to 3 minutes. That's what it is.
Hmm.
Anyway, on and off for 40 minutes, that's just not okay. Anyway, they go on to say, it took that long because the closest ambulance to respond only had a driver with no EMTs to care for her in the back.
Oh.
I believe it may have come from the volunteer fire department. The second properly staffed ambulance had to come from a town about 20 minutes away. And having activated EMS at that school several times in my 2 years there, that was absolutely not unusual for it to take that long. Because it was an away athlete, I didn't really get much follow-up about what happened with her. But I do know that after she was transported and she did stabilize and was admitted to the nearest children's hospital for further testing and eval. According to her grandfather, the cause of her seizures hadn't been properly identified at the time, but they had ruled out epilepsy, according to him, which would explain why her seizure pattern was somewhat atypical based on what I know now.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
Mm-hmm. So that's the only seizure story that I put in, but I just have to say, we received an insane amount of stories about people who have responded to a seizure that was like out of the blue, like insidious onset, like maybe like a coach or something that was in the dugout or just, you know, living life and they had a seizure and then never had one again.
Oh, that's crazy.
Right.
What the heck?
Right. Like, where did that come from?
Yeah. It was time. You know, you just got to get one out of the way.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, you know what? Just kidding. We do have another seizure story. This one is a cool one from Kevin.
Hey, cool one from Kevin.
You want to read this one?
Yes. Kevin says, football player had epilepsy. Retore his ACL on a play. He knew it. The stress triggered an event. He knew it was coming, warned us. We laid him back down. Seizure lasted about 30 seconds. We stood him up and helped him off after. Yeah, that's true. Sometimes, like, they have that like kind of aura before. So sometimes they do kind of feel like, uh-oh,
mm-hmm.
here it comes. So that is nice. Someone who's like been through it, mm-hmm. who can give you that heads up like, uh-oh,
mm-hmm.
it's coming. So then you can prep, get them in a good, in a safe position. So.
Right.
That's crazy about the trigger.
Right. Well, yeah. Kevin said, spoke with his primary care physician after, and he stated that high stress will cause that to happen. The seizure medication does what it does to control the random occurrences.
Yeah.
But when there's a dump of hormones and the body is in the perfect storm that stress creates, then it will happen.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
See, so, stress.
Honestly, that's the biggest thing with, like, Gen Med. I usually ask them what... Like, depending on what the what the condition is, like, what is their triggers? Like, what is their management plan? Because those two things, you can get a really big picture idea of what you really need to prevent it and what you need to do to treat it.
That's my big question when it comes to migraines, if people know what their triggers are.
Oh, dang.
Because some kids, suck. Like, they'll come in, like, oh, yeah, they have migraines. Mm-hmm. So trying to understand, well, what are your triggers? And, you know, a lot of times it's sleep and stress, which go really well with college with college student athletes. Mm-hmm. So kind of gives me an idea of, okay, well, when finals come around, you're probably going to be having some more migraines.
And what has worked for you in the past?
Man, I have not had, like, migraines are so complex.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not had anything, like, outside of just them taking their medication, like Excedrin or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we brought this up a while ago in our electrical stimulation, our TENS education episode, that they've done studies on using TENS to relieve migraine symptoms.
On your head?
I think you can do it on, I think it was on your neck. And like, but the thing is, they had to do it when they felt it coming on.
Oh.
Like, I don't think it was beneficial when it already happened. So I think it was that same thing when you kind of feel the migraine starting to come on, that's when you were supposed to apply the TENS. So I do have an athlete right now who has been getting migraines a lot lately, which I told him, like, you need to see your doctor.
Yeah,
because, like, totally. He's starting to have a lot more episodes.
Mm.
But I told him, I said, hey, next time, if you're on campus and you feel like it's coming on, let's try the TENS, see what happens.
Because mm-hmm.
I told him about it. I said, hey, this might actually help some of your symptoms.
Right.
So
I'll
keep you posted.
I have heard putting your feet in, like, super hot water helps because it takes the blood flow towards your feet.
Oh, okay.
Away from your head. So usually if I have an athlete with a migraine, I'll start with that. I'll put, like, dark room, you know, put your feet in. But, I mean, it just depends on what caused it because, like, you also have to treat for the trigger.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Have any of your athletes had cancer?
I haven't had one personally, but where one of the schools that I was at, we actually had a student athlete that had cancer. So I wasn't, like, fully in tune with the care and what was going on, but I had, like, some of the snippets of mm-hmm. kind of the care that was going on. So it's pretty crazy.
I've had one athlete who had cancer and they came back, but because they were still in chemo, they had to stay away from the team and they had to be in a mask. This was, like, years ago.
Oh, okay.
This is, like, really, really, maybe, like, almost a decade ago.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And then they ended up, I left, but then they ended up going into remission, and then...
Nice. That's awesome.
Right. And then they were actually able to play again.
Oh, that's cool.
At a limited capacity. I can't remember why, because, I mean, I wasn't there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, there's... that's always a cool story to hear when they get to come back to sport.
Mm-hmm. Their team was super supportive. It was pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, there was that one... I think he, I don't know if he's still on the Steelers, but when he got drafted, it was, I think it was a University of Pittsburgh athlete, running back. I think it was like James Conner. I can't remember if, if that was him for sure. But yeah, that was a big deal. Like he had cancer during one of the, one of his years. I don't know if it was junior or senior year. But he was still preparing for the NFL draft too. So he had to manage training with obviously chemotherapy and radiation,
right?
So that was kind of an interesting story that kind of put it, I feel like, for like more publicity kind of thing, that kind of put it out there more about athletes with cancer.
Do you want to read the story?
Yes, this one's by Anonymous. I had a cheerleader and a volleyball player both get lymphoma in the same year. Oh, that's
I know,
interesting.
I know.
They were both from the same general area in our state. My volleyball girl had been sick with flu / cold like symptoms, but was never significant. We kept sending her to the general med doc, and he kept saying, it's just a cold, it's just a cold. We finally asked the doctor to run more significant tests as to why she was continually sick. And that's when we found the lymphoma. It's one of my biggest points now to student athletes is to fight for what you think you might have wrong. She knew something wasn't right with her body, but she just kept getting the same answers from the doctor. I know cancer wasn't a logical thing for him to look for, but after like 6 months, you would assume he should have dug deeper. Never stop fighting if you think something is not right. That goes for the athlete with self-advocacy, but it also goes for the athlete trainer because we are their voice. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. And plus, like a lot of times, like when you do advocate for yourself, a lot of times the doc will be like, oh, okay. Like, they might give you, like, the, well, I don't think so, you know, but at the end of the day, hey, as long as you get what you want, I think that's the important part. It just sucks because, yeah, it's just like just ordering more blood tests, you know.
Right.
Something, quote unquote, simple, you would think, or, you know. So it sucks sometimes that's how it goes, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's hard, too, because, like, it's not like, I mean, you have the history in front of you.
Yeah.
But it's not like they are seeing you for continually for that 6 months, you know? So they really have to put the pieces together. So that's where it comes into play that you as the athletic trainer or the athlete need to actually stand up and advocate and fill in the gaps of where those pieces are missing.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too, is, you know, that's why it's, you know, the importance of the athletic trainer. Because I guarantee you that athletic trainer saw that athlete for those entire 6 months being continually sick, whereas the doctor's only seeing them snapshots within those 6 months. Right. So yeah, that does. Right. You see it as the athletic trainer, like, dude, this has been so long.
And like, how many people had just come in, they're like, oh, I've been sick forever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it definitely is tough, but that, again, shows the importance of athletic trainers advocating.
So moving into diabetes. We did actually get a good amount of stories about diabetes. I think eventually I want to do like story episodes on each one of these, but I think this was like a good overview. So this first anonymous one is actually about two different experiences because diabetes can be so different in each person and each sport athlete.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So this anonymous person said, I had a few. Two stick out the most. The first one was a college baseball player who was a type 1 diabetic. He had a pump but would run out of places to put it. He was skinny and his sights would have become too raw, so he had to make sure he had backups. Mm. You could always tell when his levels weren't correct because he would act like a jerk. He fully admitted that if he was being cranky or rude to people, it was a sure sign that he needed to check his blood glucose.
That really gives truth to the Snickers commercial.
Oh, yeah. You aren't you when you're hungry.
Yeah. That's
you aren't you when your blood pressure's
when your blood sugar's low.
That's what I meant. Blood sugars. Actually, I did hear, I can't remember which is which, but I think like low blood sugar is like cranky and rude and, you know, just like a jerk. And then high blood sugar is like kind of like drunk, loopy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The second one, so anonymous continues. The second one was a high school football player who was newly diagnosed and struggled to understand how to control his glucose.
That's hard.
He didn't want people to know about it, so instead of asking for help, he'd try to figure out on his own. This led to many days with glucose levels way too low or way high due to improper dosing. We had many conversations with the parent and kid to get him back to his endocrinologist and figure out what he was truly supposed to be doing. Our football coach is incredibly supportive of ATs and told us he would do whatever it is we say.
Nice. That's good. See, that's the tough. That's what I always tell like athletic training students, like at our level, like the collegiate mm-hmm. level. Like I tell them, like most of the time at this point, if you get a diabetic athlete, like they kind of know how to manage.
Yeah.
For the most
hopefully,
part.
Hopefully. Right.
It's not always guaranteed. But for right. the most part, you should get someone who's probably already had it for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Who's kind of understands our game plan. So a lot of times it's just confirming what's your plan. Remember mm-hmm. to have this, mm-hmm. making sure coach knows, hey, this is what you do. All right. But in situations like that, again, a younger athlete who, again, just got diagnosed, that's tough. Because mm-hmm. there is that learning curve of like,
There's a huge learning curve.
Do I do this?
It's not an easy condition. Not at all.
Especially as an athlete.
And you don't get to take breaks from it. That's.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Before I weigh in, I do want to read this next one from Anonymous because I think it does make some pretty good points so we can discuss.
Yeah. Anonymous says, always have snacks. That's a good rule of thumb for all situations.
Right.
Has always been my personal rule. But once I had diabetic athletes, it was a work rule too. I always have something super sugary and quickly digested to get a spike when they're low. I usually ask for access to their readings during preseason football camp, practices, and games. Usually, I just hold on to their phone while they're on the field. Usually, they wear a monitor, so looking for dramatically low levels is usually a red flag. Or, if we have the app open, we watch it drop quickly through practice. The other thing we have had to reteach is how to eat prior to practices/knowing what a practice or day might look like. Is it a game day? Hard practice? Walkthrough? They are all different fueling. Knowing the sport is so important too. My football diabetic and my lacrosse diabetic need to be handled differently. Yeah, true.
I like the part about the different fueling because, again, like if you kind of have to plan out how much you're going to use, also expecting that once you start exercise, your blood sugars are going to spike.
Yeah.
But then once you have prolonged exercise, your blood sugars are going to go way down because they're being taken up. So, you know, it is really about trying to figure out what works for them and knowing what exercise they are doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many things that have factors.
Oh, 100%. Just this past year, I had an athlete come in with diabetes, and you know he was pretty good about it too. Like mm-hmm. usually before games, he would know like, "Hey, my blood sugar's a little low. Do you have a Gatorade or something?"
Mm-hmm.
So like you know, I'd help him out there, and then usually at halftime, I'd give him a Gatorade just in case.
Okay.
Yeah, just in case he needed a little bit extra to mm-hmm. get him over the hump. Hey, we had no issues.
That's great.
So that's a win.
I had a football athlete with diabetes, and he was pretty good about it. We just made a plan with him, like, okay, what are your levels? What are your normal levels? And then, like, the before,
yeah.
Before practice, after practice. He actually didn't have, like, one of those, like, Dexcoms or, like, one of those
mm-hmm.
Ones that, you know, is like continually reading.
Like a continuous monitoring.
Right. So he'd actually have to come out during practice and take his own blood sugar.
Finger prick.
Right. I can't remember why, but I don't know if it was like personal choice. I don't remember. This was also years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he would come out and then we would just kind of adjust and figure out what we needed to do with him.
Nice.
But there was the expectation that he had to check in with us, like at regular, you know, certain intervals and stuff. So yeah. He wasn't just like, oh, I'm just going to be over here.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to asthma.
All right. Let's do it.
Have you ever had to treat someone dealing with an asthma attack who did not have an inhaler with them?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Working track and cross country, you've never had to do that?
Yeah, they usually have their inhalers with them.
Wow. I don't know
how. Yeah, I'm trying to think back, and not once have I ever had, like, oh, no, this might be a problem. Yeah, I don't think I have, actually. I'm really trying to get deep into this thought.
You know what? You also didn't work at the high school, though.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had a couple at the high school level. I've had a couple at the college level. Fewer at the college level, for sure.
I've had delayed, like, oh, their bag's way over there and they're having an asthma attack, and like someone has to go run and grab their inhaler. I've had that, but I've never had it to where it's not with them.
Mm. Now it's mandatory that they give me their inhaler. So like I put it in our trunk.
Yeah, we do the same.
For games.
For emergencies. Mm-hmm. Like in case they forget.
Or in my kit.
Yeah. Or again, situations where, oh, my bag's in the locker room and
right.
Which makes sense.
Well, you know what? I also used to work a lot of per diem, and I'm trying to think all the times. Exactly. All the times that I've had to treat without an inhaler were people who weren't my athletes technically, because they were per diem.
Yeah. You know, they have this over the counter like inhaler now.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I saw a commercial for this one time. I was like, wait a minute, what is this? And
that
I think
it would
be
really interesting, because technically if it's over the counter, that is that something like you could like buy. Advil?
I think the chemical is just a low dose of epinephrine.
No, I'm not talking about I'm not talking like it's like Advil. I'm talking like we can give over the counter meds. So technically, could we give an over the counter inhaler?
Probably. I would say yeah, because it's over the counter.
We should look into that.
Yeah. I saw it at a commercial one time. I looked it up. I was like, what the hell is this? I've never heard of this. So it's a thing. They can get it at Target.
That is so weird.
Just a heads up.
That's new. That's a new thing. So anyway, 72% of people said yes, they have had to deal with someone who did not have an inhaler with them.
I guess I'm in the 28% then.
Yeah. I don't know how. That's bizarre to me. I mean, I guess, like, again, you didn't work at the high school and you didn't work per diem. So I guess there you go. So for me, it's all about, like, breath, obviously, and just getting them to calm down.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone who submitted a story, and they were talking about the exhale is really important, like the like getting breath out. And I was reading into this too before the episode, because I guess the reason why the exhale is so important, because it's harder to exhale, so people are like grab that inhale a lot easier.
Yeah.
And so because of that, then they just keep getting inhales. So then that's why they say try to get that exhale twice as long as the inhale.
Oh, okay.
Because that's going to help regulate that breathing.
Yeah.
Also that those like blowing out a candle, like the pursed lips will help with the pressure in the lungs.
Yeah.
So the like in through the nose, out through. I usually do like out like blow a candle.
Yeah, I do the straw.
Like a straw.
That's what I do, like, until they have their inhaler, or even after the inhaler, to help start that calm down process, right? Because again, a trigger is stress.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you can't breathe, that's scary,
and it is scary,
and you're gonna panic and stress out and make it worse, and then, you know, it just keeps spiraling from there. So yeah, the big thing is that whole calm down, like, okay, let's just focus on the breathing. That's interesting to know about the exhale part, about making that a little bit longer, because a lot of times I just go for the slow and just, hey, like, nice and slow and controlled, blow out through a nose or blow out through your mouth like you're blowing through a straw, which does slow it down. But now it's nice to have that reason to why we're focusing on that. That's pretty cool.
So anonymous, this one's anonymous. I've talk/breath worked a ton of athletes out of their first asthma attack, or when it strikes and they are out of puffs for the inhaler.
Oh, so unlucky.
Or when they forgot it in their other bag, LOL.
Yeah.
The key I have found is to stay calm and have a nice even tone to your voice and be assertive, but not anxious, and talk them through some full cycle breathing. I like 3 seconds in the nose, 5 seconds out the mouth.
Nice.
They're always going to say they can't get a breath in, and that is usually what makes people panic.
Yeah.
If you help them realize that's normal for the moment right now and only temporary, then they can work on calming down and focusing on their breathing.
Nice. Yeah.
I like the assertive but not anxious.
Yeah.
I was at a cross-country meet, I want to say, and we had a bunch of athletic trainers, and then we had a couple of EMTs who rolled by, and I don't know why the EMTs took this, and I'm not bashing EMTs. This is just, they happen to be EMTs. The EMTs, I don't know, came by, and I don't know why they were treating someone, but they came down, and someone, I want to say they must have been having an asthma attack, and the EMT comes over, and he's like, calm down. And, like, literally, we all just looked up and were like, oh, my gosh, this, that stressed us out.
Yeah, I was like, I'm stressed now.
Yeah.
Thanks. Oh, I just need to calm down? Damn it.
Oh, dang it. Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
And it, obviously, like, it's hard sometimes, like, you're like, oh, what do I say? What do I say? You know, especially if you haven't been in that situation before. Yeah. But it does take practice.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Usually, I like the look at me, focus on me. Yep. Hey, where'd you go? I'm right here.
Oh, yeah, man. I don't like eyes closed.
Yeah.
Let's keep those bad boys open. Keep the peepers open.
We got another cool one from Kevin.
Man, two cool ones from Kevin?
I know. He said, take gauze dampened with cool water and place it over their mouth. Have them breathe through it. Not sure if it scientifically does anything, but at least calms them a bit and slows their respiration rate. So I did ask how he did this because one time I tried this. I'll go in that in a second. But basically, he said that he just has the athlete hold it.
Yeah.
And they do it themselves, which is obviously a lot better than like you putting it on their mouth.
You look like you're chloroforming them.
Right, exactly.
No, that's interesting.
Well, the thing, so I did like a hard search for this because I've heard this too. And
really?
Obviously, and yeah, years ago, because I used this probably about like 3 or 4 years ago, I tried to use this. But I'm not sure where I heard it because I cannot find it literally anywhere.
Interesting.
But the reason why that I'm pretty sure like it makes sense is because sometimes the like it, and it depends on the trigger because like if the asthma attacks from cold dehumidified air, then you're gonna want to warm the airway, and then also moisten the airway.
Yeah.
So that's why breathing through a wet gauze could help, like, re-moisturize the airway. That's why they also say, like asthmatics should use, like, a scarf over their mouth or, like, a mask over their mouth when exercising in, like, cold.
Yeah.
It's also, it talks about in the NATA position statement if you want to, like, read more about it, but I don't know exactly. I can't find anything specifically about like gauze with water.
Yeah.
So I don't remember why I knew to try it, but definitely calm them down first. That's
good.
Because it's not going to help if they're like not calm. Right, right. And I think it didn't help too. Like I was trying to hold it and I was like, I feel like I'm just like.
This feels weird.
Right. But I really like the idea of like having them, you know, try it, especially like if it is from. Like you are trying to reverse their trigger.
Yeah.
Like it makes it, that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. That's interesting. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. I really wish, like I did a hard search to try to figure out where I heard this, but I literally cannot find anything.
Oh.
Yeah. We're kind of on our last few. We have pregnancy. And
hey, that's a way throwback for us because of the that was one of our first.
It is. You know what's also what's also a really big throwback? We actually I did an education episode.
Yes, you did.
On asthma. Way back when.
And that was way back in the day.
Way back when.
That was when
first episodes.
Yeah, that was when our audio was primitive.
Yeah, sorry about the audio. Also, actually even more sorry about the pregnancy audio. We have two amazing athletic trainers, Pam and Kelsey. They have such a great like content of working with pregnant athletes and personal experiences, but also like tips and tricks and how to, you know, have conversations and, you know, the whole bit. But the audio sucks on that. Like literally, I think something happened with the audio that it like put them over each other for a little bit. So.
Well, we weren't using the
fancy stuff.
The one that we have now.
No.
But that's how we found it. That's how we got there.
Mm-hmm. So about a third of the people who responded to our poll have had a pregnant athlete.
Interesting. I have not.
I have had one.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice. That's pretty cool. That's interesting.
We got an honest one. This was the toughest. She had a serious mental health crisis 2 weeks before she knew. We had to have a long talk about her options and decisions. The toughest thing was having to communicate with her parents and coaches, and she was very hesitant to tell her coaches. Mm. Our academic advisor and I were two that helped decide how to talk to coach. Mom was included. Our coach had actually had a child herself while in college and was incredibly understanding, luckily. The athlete ended up finishing out the season. She chose abortion, and she felt like she just wasn't ready / couldn't handle it. We did a lot of work, and she was in therapy for a while. She ended up being ineligible due to grades and chose to step away from school. Fast forward to this year, and she's pregnant and keeping her baby and is so happy.
Nice.
I think those hard conversations, it's important to keep your own feelings and beliefs checked at the door. It's such a sensitive subject, and that choice is so individual that I think making it clear to the athlete that you support them no matter what they decide. On the flip side, though, I think it's so vital to check in with yourself. If you don't feel like you can be objective and supportive, find a way to remove yourself from that situation or a way to step back to remain objective. As healthcare providers, it is so important to separate our beliefs from care, in my opinion. If you are truly steadfast in your beliefs and being pro-life, that is totally fine. That is your decision. But as a healthcare provider, it is unethical in my mind for you to force that onto a patient or athlete. So having that conversation first with yourself and recognizing that if you can't be objective and supportive, maybe you need to take a step back from the situation and pull on others in that sports medicine team to help navigate.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought that was a really good addition because this is not saying like you need to not be true to yourself. Yeah. Like, if you can't be that person for that athlete, you don't have to be.
Yep. Yeah, it's true.
You don't have to be. Have someone else do it.
Yeah. And it also highlights that this is not just like, this is a team that like everyone is here to support.
Right.
Like that athlete and whatever right. decision that they want to choose to do. Mm-hmm. So I think it just highlights the team aspect behind the person that has to make the decision that hopefully, you know, they can feel some support and they don't necessarily feel that they're in it truly by themselves.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we did get a couple of people who submitted stories about pregnancy and kind of like working through, you know, the first trimester. They like, yeah. And depending on the sport, you're really talking to the physician, even if you don't have direct contact with the physician.
Yeah.
It's more of like, let me get those clearance notes. Let me make sure that I am following mm-hmm. and knowing any limitations this person might have. And just keeping in contact with the athlete and just making sure everything's good.
Yeah, for sure. Because, yeah, the pregnant athlete now becomes, well, now we got to consider baby.
Right.
Make sure baby's okay in there.
Right.
That's why we have the red flags to stop activity for a pregnant athlete. If they mm-hmm. have like certain red flags, that, hey, you need to get checked out now.
Right. Right. The pregnant athlete who I had was a performer. And okay. we were doing a lot of injury prevention circuits that we had to alter depending on what the movement was.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah.
We did a lot of like Pilates.
Nice.
So then we had to like alter depending on like if there's like a prone exercise, obviously we're not gonna
it's a little more difficult.
Right.
And you can't be on your back too long.
No.
The legs are gonna go numb.
Right. Depending on where you are.
Yeah, depending on where, which phase.
Right. So the last one I have in here is the female athlete triad, which surprisingly 41% of people who responded said that they have had to deal with.
Nice.
And then also that goes along with eating disorders, which 84% of people actually said yes, they have dealt with an eating disorder, which was very surprising to me. I think I've only seen one in my career.
I've had a couple with eating disorder or disordered eating. Mm-hmm. I haven't had any.
That's a good distinction.
Yeah, I haven't had anyone truly diagnosed with a female athlete triad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, could they have probably had it? Probably. But like mm-hmm. to actually hit the diagnosis of actually understanding their bone mineral density and stuff, I haven't had someone truly diagnosed with it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've seen someone who's going through treatment mm-hmm. for eating disorder, disordered eating. And I've seen someone who is in denial of their condition later on have like a pretty big crisis.
You want to share anything or?
No, I mean, it was tough because like I didn't see the crisis because I left at that point, but I heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that one was a really tough one because she was in denial of it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's hard. Like you want to give the person the benefit of the doubt, especially because it's other people expressing concern.
Right.
And like when you travel, right, you see it like, oh, we're all eating lunch, but this person all of a sudden's gone. Right. Hmm. Like just right. all of a sudden disappears. And like right. her teammates express concern like, hey, I've noticed this. And like mm-hmm. you have all these signs and you want to help, but you can't force someone.
Right. Especially right? if they don't see it.
Yeah. And if we did have a window to at least start the conversation because mm-hmm. I think there was one race. I can't remember what happened. There was something enough to where we were like, hey, let's have you go see like our team doc. Right. And she was like, okay. And she was in there and it was me, our head, and then our team physician to start the conversation of, hey, what's mm-hmm. going on? We kind of want to look into this. And she brought up a good point. The athlete did, because she was like, I just don't understand why we're doing all this for one bad race.
Oh.
And we're like, damn. Good point. Right. So again.
Also, like, it's terrifying for an athlete yeah. to walk in with three like big wigs.
Yeah. And 100%. Like, yeah, you know, I get it. Right. And if you feel that you don't have a problem, like, or you don't feel something's wrong, then you may just be like, well, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. So, but eventually, yeah, it kind of went more south as it progressed. But yeah, it disordered eating disorder, it's such a hard situation because, again, some people aren't ready to express help.
Mm-mm.
And that's probably the tough part.
Right.
Because they like it's not like they're blatant about it. Like, okay, I just ate. I'm gonna go purge now. Or like, right? You do a good job of like hiding it and like they mask it very well. So mm-hmm. it's a hard thing to manage for sure.
That kind of is discussed in this last story we have. this one's also anonymous. I did have an athlete with a female athlete triad, but didn't find out about it until years later after she recovered from her eating disorder and was in school to be a registered dietitian.
Oh, that's cool.
I know. Seriously. Great. Because then that person can now relate to yes. whoever they're working with. The broken fib from an impact injury raised flags, but she was smart enough to know the quote unquote right answers
yeah.
to my questions. This is tough because you can't help someone that doesn't want or know that they need help.
Yeah.
She had orthorexia, so to her and many others around her, she was just being healthy. And there was no obvious / dramatic weight loss as she was always healthy and fit. My advice is to keep a healthy relationship with the student-athlete, and when they are ready, they will let you in.
Yeah. Honestly, that's after that situation with, you know, that athlete and our team doc and the, what is this? What's happening?
Mm-hmm.
kind of thing. Like, I just made sure that she knew, like, this is a safe place. And I'm not mm-hmm. We're not going to talk about that. So we can talk about whatever you want. And like, I just want to make sure, like, if she was ready to bring it up, she would be able to.
Because mm-hmm.
that's what it is. Yeah. Especially, again, if they're in that phase of like knowing the right answers or like, hey, maybe right. they don't want right. help or maybe they just still don't know that, hey, I might need help. Then, hey, okay. But I'll be here when you're ready.
Mm-hmm. You know, another good route is you could also just reroute them to go mental health mm-hmm. just in general, not specifically for that, because a lot of it is also, there's some other underlying, there's a reason why, like depending on like if they feel like they need control over something or,
yeah.
you know, whatever it is that there is that's like causing it can also help figuring out with mental health.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say was it's rarely just the eating disorder or disordered right, eating. Right. There's something else that's how it's being manifested. Mm-hmm. And again, it is a control thing, right? Maybe mm-hmm. there's just some things in life that can't be controlled, but this is something that is in direct control by the mm-hmm. by the student athlete.
Mm-hmm. I actually went to school with someone who was an eating disorder survivor, and she had gone through like severe treatment, and she was very open about it, and it was really
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, really helpful to hear from her, and she was really passionate about the topic, and
wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, good for her.
Yeah.
It's not easy to talk about after.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
You got anything else? You got any other gen med, fun gen med things?
No. My seizure, the seizure story is always the one that, that's my go-to gen med that I've probably said on this podcast a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I know for this, I'm like, I think I shared a lot of my gen med.
I know, I'm like, yeah, I don't really have many other ones.
Yeah, well, cool. If you guys are new, we do every other episode as education or stories. This one is a story episode. Next week, we are going back to our education episodes. And if you're interested in CEUs, make sure you check out the, you can go to our website or our Instagram has lots of information on how to obtain CEUs, not for this specific episode, but we do have CEU episodes. We also work with MedBridge, who you can use code ATCORNER for $150 off. Get your subscription of CEUs. We have a Facebook group. Check that out in the show notes. Lots of cool things. We're almost actually close to wrapping up season 4. So get ready for kind of wrapping up and moving towards season 5, that's which right. will start this August.
We got some fun stuff ready to go.
We do.
See, we always have ideas.
We do. So if you guys want to hear anything before the end of the season, or if you're ready for something for next season, make sure you reach out to us. And I think that's the end of my fine print. You got anything else, Randy?
Nope, that was perfect. Thank you for helping us showcase athletic training behind the tape. Bye.